This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Botzen, macht das Tor.
Das Tor, der zählt das 2:2. Dresden ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke, da kommt der Ball. Tor, 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 Tor,
Tor. Hi everyone and welcome to the second episode of this Zweite Bundesliga Podcast Special. I'm Eva, your host for the day, and actually this is the first time I'm ever hosting stuff, so please forgive me for any complications. And now I'm very excited to introduce our interview guest, Felix Tamsund, to you. Felix, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me. How are you, Eva?
I'm very good as well. Very excited about this. To get started into this conversation, we all know you're a Köln fan, but obviously that's not a Zweite Bundesliga club at the moment. But so who would be your favorite club at the moment in the Zweite Bundesliga, and what is your take on the league in general?
Oh, wow. My take on the league is in general is that I really, really, I'm apart from I'm SC Köln, I'm an SC Köln member, going to almost every game home and away, but I do quite a bit of ground hopping, and especially because I'm based in Cologne, there are so many clubs in the region, so I get to go to Zweite Bundesliga games quite often. I love the league. I just can't help but love it, but love the fact that that many of the teams are so bad that it creates a situation that the league is equal in a way that I've never seen anything like this. Like it's crazy and it's loads of fun. From a fan culture point of view, it really is like a treasure of stories and so many interesting angles and so many interesting fan and ultra groups in the Zweite Bundesliga. So I'm definitely a fan. In terms of my favorite team in the Zweite Bundesliga, I don't think there is one. I like several grounds from the Zweite Bundesliga. This I can say. I've just been to Bochum for like the millionth time. Obviously, it's just an hour from here, so it's relatively easy to get to. Love the ground. Would definitely recommend it. FC St. Pauli is another ground that I really like. Volksparkstadion is another ground that I really like. Dresden, fantastic ground. I will choose a favorite team, but I don't have any sentiments towards the club. But in terms of everything around the match day experience, it was so fantastic that I just have to recommend it. VfL Osnabrück, absolutely. Fantastic little ground, a football romantic's dream, basically. And the whole match day atmosphere in Osnabrück is something that is definitely worth experiencing firsthand. So I'll go with Osnabrück for now.
I can understand that. It's really nice if you win there on a Monday night in the derby. So to you in general, so if I'm correctly, you were born in Israel and lived there for how long?
Most of my life, for 28 years, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then you came to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get into the field of journalism? What was the initial goal?
Yeah, basically, I studied journalism in Israel, I initially didn't think of becoming a football journalist or a sports journalist. My initial intention was becoming something in politics or something in that area, because that's a field that's obviously plays a massive part in my life and in terms of my views and stuff like that. So I really, like, my thinking was more going towards the news direction. Then I somehow became a part of this young journalist exchange program between journalists from Israel, Palestine and Germany. And I landed in Germany for 6 months out of nowhere. I wasn't expected. After my 6 months of internship at Deutsche Welle here in Germany, I was told that if I want, I can stay, and that was completely out of the blue. Basically, I didn't know anything about Germany. I didn't speak the language, which I do to some extent now. I didn't know anything about the culture. I didn't know anything about like the local elements of this country, of everything that happens here. And I thought I have to learn about these things as quickly as possible. And the way I thought of doing that was ground hopping. I just went to an insane amount of football games, about 2-3 football games a week, every week, for 3.5 years. I'm doing this until now, a bit less because obviously time and stuff, but that's how I learned everything I know about this place. That's how I know everything I know about the political situation in Germany, about what's considered right wing, what's considered left wing, what's considered, what are the limits when it comes to certain things with the other discriminatory tendencies like sexism, for instance. Again, I personally, that's how I learned the language. Like, that's literally how I learned to speak German. So basically, that's how I got into football journalism. And I think German football is a very, very, very good place for a person like me that sort of has a very clear political element to their activity, because there's so much going on here, and there's the amount of stories that I want to report about, and I just can't because I just don't have the time. It's just insane. My list is endless. And that's thanks to how interesting the fan scene here and how involved the fans here are, from the perspective of an ultra group, from the perspective of just organized fans generally. It's for me, it's the gift that keeps on giving. It gave me so much in the last 4.5 years, and and long may it continue. So that's basically how I got into the whole field of football journalism.
Well, it's really, really cool. I really like your threads on Twitter, especially. I think you have a lot of good takes on fandom in Germany, and you really connect politics and football very well. I think it's very understanding for everyone. If someone follows you on Twitter and what attracts attention is on the first side is your connection to Köln. You spoke about it. How did you get to be a Köln fan?
Yeah, with FC Köln, I have quite an interesting story, actually, that did not start when I moved to Germany, surprisingly enough. The story starts when I was 18 or something, 17. I was completely addicted to Football Manager back in Israel, to levels that are like inexplicable. It was inhumane. I used to play like 14, 15 hours a day, every day. To some extent, this was part of the reason why I couldn't finish school in Israel in the beginning, and I had to do it all over again because I was addicted to Football Manager. And it's a fantastic reason, I know, but it took a lot of time to sort of get over that and get to uni. Anyways, bottom line, from 2000, I used to play since 2003, and from 2005 onwards, I have no idea why, I can't remember why, but my go-to Football Manager team was always Erste FC Köln. Until 2015, I genuinely can't explain why. My first instinct would be that it had young players like Podolski and Sinkiewicz that you can sell and get lots of money and then build a team. I don't know, but it was always Erste FC Köln. So obviously I didn't know much about the city, about its fan culture, about the whole thing, but I knew so many players from the club's history. Once I actually moved to Germany and I knew I'm moving to this region, I was a bit, hang on a minute. What happens now? And initially I lived in Bonn, which is about 35 kilometers from here. As soon as I understood that I'm staying in Germany, I automatically made the move to Cologne. Obviously, it's also the bigger city and it has lots of opportunities and stuff. That was mostly what I thought about. But from the moment I landed here, I fell completely in love with the city. Like, the city is Yeah, it's everything that I remember in my football manager career and more. It's a city of people that have a very specific set of characteristics that I can totally get on board with. People here are warm. People here talk to you. People here don't. You sit alone at a pub and people will not leave you alone. You will end up with another group of people. There's the element of carnival that I like a lot. I'm hearing you laughing, Eva. Thank you. Somehow it got me also into the football club. I am nowadays, after 4.5 years of living in Cologne, I'm going to almost every single game, home and away, including Saarbrücken, which was loads of fun. I'm also in a I'm in a fan group myself, which is great fun. I genuinely can't get enough. That's also where a place where a bit of my journalism comes from. Like I don't only report on these things because I see them from afar. It's also because I am a fan myself. I am going to games myself on every single week almost. So it also contributes to me professionally. Obviously, that's not the reason why I'm going to ask FC Köln games. The reason is because I like to suffer, but that's a, yeah.
I can understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the reason I got into the club. I'm completely in love with it. The city, everything that comes with it. It's just fantastic. And again, long may it continue.
Yeah, I think everyone can see that in the way you describe football, how much time you invest in speaking about topics that everyone is concerned about. I think everyone who is active on Twitter saw one of your threads once. My question would be, how do you gather information for them? I think you quote a lot of German Twitter pages as well, fan culture pages. How do you choose a topic and how do you get your sources together?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, for the most part, my stories will not come from... I would say it's 50-50. Like, to an extent, of course, I get my updates through Twitter, like many people, because Twitter is also a good place where many active fans are active on, and they have active accounts, and many ultra groups have active Twitter accounts that they sort of convey messages. I would say it's through three different aspects of my life. I would say one aspect is obviously social media. I read about something, and if I think it's important enough, and if I feel it's something that something that I could add another element or another aspect to, or go a bit deeper and spread this story forward, then I start looking into it. The other aspect is, as I said, going to games is a big source for stories. You talk to people, you sort of make your own judgment and your own opinion on certain stories. There were quite a few instances that I found stories through ground hopping and stuff like that, through talking to active fans. The third element is being in contact with fans from other clubs, being in contact with sort of all sorts of elements in German football that sort of are fan oriented, that care about fan culture. Sometimes because they know what I do and they know the sort of stances I take on, for instance, issues like fan rights and fan culture and how important I think this element is of German society. I really do think it's an important element of German society, and that's why it should be preserved and not be countered like many of Germany's interior ministers think, unfortunately. That's another aspect, like tips I get from people, and if I see the story is something that I can sort of go in a bit deeper and do some research and come up with a story that would would be interesting for international readers, because obviously my Twitter is in English mostly, and 10% Kölsch, but 90% English. If I think I can add something, if I think I can go deeper, if I have the feeling that I can sort of bring the story forward somehow, and maybe in a way, yeah, I don't know if I actually do this, like it's obviously for other people to testify, but if I feel like this story could sort of make people think, hang on a minute, why isn't it like that in our football fan scene? Why isn't it like that with our club? Why isn't it like that with our league? That's something that I personally see as every time someone quote tweets a thread of mine and says, hang on a minute, why don't we do anything about this? We also deserve fan rights. We also deserve to have kickoff times that fit us match-going fans. Why don't we do anything about this? That's something that I see as the highest form of compliment possible. Like more than the feedback I get from colleagues, more than the feedback I get from anyone. Basically, this is for me the top. Because fan rights matter to me not only in Germany, obviously elsewhere. In Germany, it's obviously because I'm part of it myself. It carries a bit more meaning. But I really do hope that people sort of read about what's going on here and sort of be inspired, is maybe the wrong word, but sort of get new ideas of how to demand rights themselves and how to organize themselves and how to basically take care of their own rights as football fans and as people sometimes, because it's about civil rights sometimes apparently, but yeah, that's basically the sort of wrap up of my work and how I see things.
Well, I think for me personally, I always look out for your threads because they're very understandable, even if English is not your mother tongue, because you always connect them to German tweets as well. But I think this is why they're quite popular on Twitter, on throughout football Twitter, I'd say. I really like them, so keep up the good work. One last question before we get into a quick break. On the weekend, Hamburger SV is allowed to use pyrotechnics for the first time. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that? And do you think this is a good step into legalizing pyrotechnics for everyone?
I'd like to hope so. I genuinely don't think so, because let's start with the positive. I feel like I'm always so negative also on Twitter, like because of, you know, the politics and stuff. Left-wing people are never happy with anything. So let's start with the positives. The positive is that there is a dialogue between a club and its fan scene when it comes to pyrotechnics. That dialogue has led to HSV acknowledging, officially taking an official stance by Ben Hoffman, the club boss, and the club itself, and its fan betrayal and stuff, that pyrotechnics is an integral part of fan culture, which is something that is a breakthrough. It's something that many clubs were obviously silently supporting, pyro as part of fan culture. Like Union Berlin is a very good example of that. Obviously, we all know that everyone at Union Berlin sort of supports pyro, but they would never say it out loud. That's a completely different story. But anyways, bottom line, many clubs sort of silently don't do anything against it. But the fact that there is such a massive, massive club like HSV that supports it openly and publicly as a result of the discussion with its own fans, it's definitely a step forward. It's definitely a breakthrough. And it's absolutely encouraging to see that such dialogues could result in good solutions for both sides, basically. But that's where the critical element comes in. I don't think it's the end solution. I personally don't think most ultra groups in Germany would accept such a solution in the long run. I think there's a certain set of solutions that sort of many fan groups and ultra groups sort of raised that got rejected so vehemently by the authorities here in Germany that I personally don't see it holding long term. I mean, we only need to go as far as, when was it? November, I think, that a politician from Die Grüne, Monika Lazar, she made a kleine Anfrage, like an inquiry to the government, to the federal government of Germany, about whether the country should advocate for the or should support the models when it comes to the use of pyrotechnics in stadiums in countries like Norway or US, or the US, where, you know, we're not talking about countries where safety regulations don't exist. They do exist, and there's still pyro in stadiums, and the number of injuries is zero because it's all legalized and it's under certain, there's a certain process that you need to go through before you're allowed to use pyro. Yes, even the flares that the German government has made. The response Bundestag member Monika Lazar received was just complete rejection, no willing of dialogue in any way. And that sort of shows that Germany, even though it's considered in many parts of the world, Germany is considered to be some sort of a innovative country or something. But everyone that lives here knows the authorities here are insanely conservative, and that's why I don't see it happening anytime soon. The fact that such a club like HSV, 80-something thousand members, former European Cup winner, Bundesliga winner, a big club in Germany, a dominant club in German football, openly says, we believe pyrotechnics are part of fan culture because our fans told us that, and we trust our fans and we stand behind our fan and ultra groups. That's a very welcome development, and I can only hope that many other clubs will follow suit and do the same.
Yeah, for me, personally, I don't understand how, like, everyone's making a fuss about pyrotechnics, but yet in so many stadiums, for example, it's legal to smoke everywhere. Mm-hmm. Especially they smoke when children are near you as well, and normally there are not that many children in the standing area where the ultras are. Mm-hmm. So this is for me something that isn't really explainable, because smoke from cigarettes or e-cigarettes as well isn't healthy as well if you just sit in this for a long time.
At the end of the day, there's also the element that I know for a fact that some ultra groups have designated people for the whole handling of pyro, the people that did the research and read a lot and stuff like that. I've heard many of them suggesting that, listen, if it's just a suggestion made by a few people I know from ultra groups in Germany, but if the government would say, listen, let's take a few members of a certain ultra group and put them through like a safety course about pyrotechnics of a few days or something like that, and then they'll be certified. I mean, I don't think anyone would be against it. The best evidence to show that they do it anyways is the number of injuries as a result of pyrotechnics in German football. I mean, in the last data we have, if I'm not mistaken, is from the 17-18 season. I mean, there's a new report, but I personally haven't got a chance to sort of look into it deeply. German police say that in the top three leagues in Germany, the 17-18 season, we had 21, 22 million people going to games. The number of people injured as a result of pyrotechnics was about 50. So it's as close to non-existent, basically. And when you have 22 million people going to games, you will have injuries of all sorts. But that just goes to show that for the most part, not always, of course, some ultra groups sort of go cross the line, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to throwing pyrotechnical elements into the pitch and stuff like that, or towards opposition fans. This should not be the case, and this should not be condoned and supported. This is wrong. This is dangerous. But in the utmost, in the lion's share, and I would say in the absolute majority of cases, the way ultra groups in Germany handle the topic of pyrotechnics is rather responsible, and this has to be said. I mean, even there was a case at the end of last season with SFC Köln when we played away in Magdeburg that flares were thrown from both sides, and after the game SFC Köln issued a message that says something along the lines of the ultra scene for the most part the ultra scene in Germany carries the responsibility of not throwing pyrotechnical elements, and it does it rather well, but in this case our ultras sort of threw flares away, something along those lines, which sort of criticized fans for throwing pyrotechnical elements, which is of course should be the case, but at the same time acknowledges that for the most part ultras in Germany don't do that. They use pyro as a visual element, like they use choreos, like they use banners, like they use town fun, however you say that, like flags that you put on the fence. It's just another visual element of like this old subculture. And the general handling of the topic is responsible as it is, but of course it can be improved, and that's exactly where the authorities come in and should take the sensible approach. As I said, I'm not very optimistic, but there you go.
I think this was already a very good first half of our chat. I think we just take a quick break and then we will get into some more serious topics, speaking about politics and social issues in football.
Yay.
So for the second part of this chat, we will start with a very recent incident at the Schalke-Hertha DFB-Pokal match. Of course, I think many people have heard about this already, but the incident was that Jordan Torunariga, so Hertha's player, was racially abused during the game. And this is discussed highly in media, for example, and what do you think went wrong in the club's statement afterwards, personally, and what should have been done on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the reactions on the pitch, we all know that the player ended up receiving a red card for one reason or the other. I think the whole topic of handling racism on the pitch as part of being a referee is something that referees are still coming to terms with, and I think it's going to take some time before they sort of understand their role and how to sort of make use of their role to sort of take a stand, which I feel was the case in the Hertha-Schalke game, Schalke-Hertha I should say. The club's response, if we take the club's response as face value, put it this way, their first statement was relatively okay. They said we take the allegations very seriously. We'll look at the footage. We'll let police know. Basically, according to the book, the reaction you would expect from a club. And by this point, it was all good. But I think if you see Schalke's reaction in the bigger context of how they handled the elephant in the room, put it this way, the story of Clemens Tönnies and the reactions to it, and how Schalke reacted to it as a club, and how Schalke's board reacted to it, and how Schalke's Mitglieder back in the day reacted to Tönnies, and how, let's call it forgiving. That's the best word I can think of. It sort of goes to show that, cool, good statement. But at the end of the day, when racism was literally knocking on your door, you didn't do anything. Your reaction was very not as you would expect from a club as big as Schalke, from a club that has a role model like Schalke. And then when race incidents like that happen, people say, and rightly so, I mean, you say you're gonna investigate this, but your own boss said things such as, What was it that people from Africa need to have more electricity because they so that they won't reproduce in the darkness or something, which is completely like insane. He said it on a stage in front of hundreds of people, And yeah, okay, so he will be suspended for 3 months and everything will be okay. You cannot, like, your credibility of dealing with racism disappears once you handle such a case in such a manner. And I think that's exactly what happens here. It was expected that the first case of racism that will involve Schalke somehow, their credibility will go down the drain because of the Tunis thing. I also think, I read somewhere that they intend on handing over like stadium banning orders for what, 3-4 months or I don't know how many, which of course can be criticized as a standalone stance. But I think the whole story should be seen in the bigger context. And the bigger context is Schalke failed in handling the Clemens Tönnies incident. And that's why their credibility with dealing with racism incidents for now in the foreseeable future will be damaged and very, very, very badly.
Yeah, for me, it would be a good idea to install an anti-racism board that is not connected to the DFB, nor the DFL, nor the clubs, but where people from all different backgrounds, like, I don't know, homosexuals, people from different ethnic minorities and women, but also men, and everyone is in this board and they decide this. If someone like Tönnies is allowed to be part of a club as big as Schalke is. The same with, I don't know, the Daniel Frahn incident as well. I think it shouldn't only be the club's responsibility to handle this, but an independent institution that takes care of this, because I think this would be personally the best solution. You have people who can really vouch for this and who can understand this, because we spoke about it off record. Old white men decide whether this was racism or not.
Yeah.
People like Hans Zappa and Gerard Asamoah, who are of dark color, are people that are insulted by something like this, and they should be the ones who can decide this. And I think this is a huge problem we have in football in general, in our society in general, looking at the recent events in Turing yesterday. Of course, we record on a Thursday, so on Wednesday, where racism is being something that we call in Germany salonfähig. So something that is kind of a higher incident happened, and because nobody reacted rightly, it's getting allowed to be normal in stadiums, in society as well. And but I also want to say, I saw a lot of posts that every Schalke fan is now the bad guy. I would definitely say that this is wrong, because you shouldn't say, if you look what the Gelsenkirchen ultras did, they are really openly anti-racism, and they, if this happens in their part of the stadium, they will go against this, because this is their moral compass. And this is something that doesn't really happen. What really pissed me off, sorry for my language, but was the first three reactions, more or less, were the referee didn't hear it, so it isn't true. Only 20 people heard it. And are you sure just doesn't want Jordan Tonerica, just want to find a way to explain his red card or his anger. And this is so wrong on so many levels, because when somebody says, I got racially abused, the first reaction shouldn't be, are you sure? Because if he says something like this, if he's on tears, I think something similar was in the preseason. I think VfL Bochum played FC St. Gallen, and Jordi Osei-Tutu was racially abused. The club said they're going to do a whole anti-racism campaign, which was a bit too small in my intent, and I think in many Bochum fans' intention as well, or what they thought about. So I think we really need someone who then says, okay, it's good that you always say remember and stuff and say no to racism, but act like it as well. Then don't say, well, if Tönnies say, I'm sure he didn't mean it like that. I think this is the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally think your idea of creating some sort of an independent board or an independent group of people that will make such decisions and will sort of, take the conversation forward, decide if and how to press charges against certain clubs or against certain people, fan groups, etc. I think that's actually a very good idea. I think the Tönnies story at Schalke sort of proved that, it provided evidence that clubs handling their own handling bad things, people from within their ranks actually did, is not necessarily the way to go. I think this is also an idea too progressive for many elements of German football. I don't think the DFB would ever accept power being taken away from it in that context, which is a shame, because I really do think it's a brilliant idea. I personally haven't thought about it up until now. I think it's a very, very good idea, and hopefully something like that will happen in the future. I do agree 100% with with what you just said about generalizations and about saying, we've read many reports saying, racism among Schalke fans or something like that. So that's exactly where we need to sort of differentiate and sort of put the things in context, because racism shouldn't be handled. And if someone made racist remarks or racist chants towards the Hertha player, he or she should be vehemently punished and strongly punished, as a way of saying, this doesn't belong here, this doesn't belong in our club, this doesn't belong in our stadiums, period. There were a number of instances that the Kurve Schalke or Ultras GE in particular sort of were active in this direction. And I really don't think it would be fair to generalize and say that all Schalke fans are racist, if anything, then the other way around. But generally, generalizations will never be accurate. I also think we need to look at their reaction to the Tönnies story from the summer. I mean, their statements, their actions, the way they sort of told their club, listen, Tönnies should be out, period, without any exceptions. And they were practically the only element in and around Schalke saying that. Like, it was Ultras GE, and I think also anti-discriminations project also said something similar. But apart from those two elements of the whole entity that's called FC Schalke 04, those were the only two elements that vocally said this should not go, this should not pass silently. Something should be done. Tönnies should be out without exceptions. The club did not follow suit on that, unfortunately. It just goes to show that, there are fans that take a stance and an active stance against such incidents. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops, how the DFB handles this, how Schalke handle this, because obviously their reaction is going to be under the microscope now because of the way they handled the story with Clemens Tönnies. And I think this could be a defining story when it comes to the handling of racist incidents in German football. And I really hope a precedent would be set for the better. But unfortunately, there's enough evidence to suggest that it might be the other way around. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops. But that's basically where we stand right now.
Yeah, another topic that was very recent in Germany, in the whole world, as well as in German football, was the 75th anniversary of the freeing of the concentration camp Auschwitz-Birkenau. I think everyone read about this, and a lot of clubs took their stance that never again, and we remember. You were personally involved in it with Eintracht Frankfurt and the Eintracht Frankfurt fan Helmut Sonneberg, mm-hmm. who you interviewed. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe tell us a bit about it, how it was, how the experience was, and how you think it was taken on in German football?
Yeah, okay. So specifically about Sonny Helmut Sonneberg, it was a story that I wanted to work on for quite a while. I've I have many friends at Eintracht Frankfurt, at the club, in the fan scene. I'm there quite often when they play in Europe. It's a club that I see as very interesting, and my people there, or my friends there, sort of brought Sonny's story to my attention. I think it was about a year ago or something. And it's something that I always wanted to sort of work on. And I'm very glad Sonny agreed to be interviewed by me. I mean, obviously, it has to be said, I am Jewish. I am also Israeli. I am when you grow up in Israel, you literally grow up with Holocaust survivors and their stories, literally from day one. I mean, I know that in Germany there's this sort of notion that sort of, you know, in the education system you learn about the Holocaust gradually and stuff, because obviously children shouldn't be told certain things that happened there. It needs to be processed in a certain way. It's also healthy that it's like that. But in Israel, because literally everyone is a descendant of Holocaust survivors, you just can't help but coming across these stories, even as a 5-6 year old kid. Talking to Holocaust survivors is something that I certainly, it's certainly nothing new to me. Both my grandmothers are Holocaust survivors from Tunisia and Morocco, and I have many relatives that survived the Holocaust in Europe. And it's definitely, it wasn't new in terms of the information I received. The story fits a certain pattern that I've heard from many Holocaust survivors. But I think that was, like, speaking about my position personally, you know, back then I lived in Israel, a country where everyone's basically like you, and you're nothing special in a way. I think living here in the past few years here in Germany, being based here, speaking the language, understanding the context, hearing those stories in the language of the perpetrators had a profound effect on me. I mean, it was the first time in years that, obviously Holocaust stories always make you think and make you sort of reflect and make you very sad and make you very angry in my case. But I think it was the first time that I sort of researched the story and looked into it. And once I was reading the words, and once I heard Sonny speaking, I couldn't help but start crying on numerous occasions. It had a really, really strong effect on me. Fortunately, the reactions ever since the story was out, the reactions have been very, very positive. People were made aware of Sonny's story and how he used football and how he sort of fell in love with Eintracht Frankfurt after his return to his hometown of Frankfurt. How they took this story and sort of said, listen, because of stories like that, first of all, football is what it is. And second of all, because of elements like that, we need to sort of remember what it's all about. We need to sort of remember that when fascist tendencies start uncovering or start unraveling in reality, we need to do something about it so that no one will go through what Sonny has. Those are exactly the reactions that I sort of hoped for. So generally speaking, it was probably the most, it's a story that personally, I don't think there was ever a story in my journalistic career that got me so emotional as this one. And what I was hoping for is to portray, is to sort of transmit those emotions in my writing and in the interview. And generally speaking, I think if the reactions are anything to go by, I think it worked quite all right, thankfully. In terms of German football in general, there were lots of fan actions about Auschwitz and about Holocaust remembrance. I can only, you know, I wrote about it also on Twitter if anyone wants to read, but I can only speak about what I've seen at before FC Köln's game at home against Freiburg last Sunday. FC Köln is a club that goes about these things in a very, very conservative, traditional way. they would usually not say anything if it's not so accepted in society and stuff. But this time I have to be fair and say they went out of their way and they made a very, very good speech before the game about the club's responsibility and about the fact that FC Köln was officially established in 1948, but the previous two clubs that were fused into being FC Köln, they had responsibility, they had Jewish players and they had Jewish members of staff. The particular story was of the Levy brothers that played football in Cologne and were murdered in the Holocaust. And personally, I felt that was, that was something that I didn't expect. And generally speaking, I think when it comes to Holocaust remembrance, both the clubs and first and foremost, fan and ultra groups did a relatively good job. Did a very, very good job. And to sort of demand more than just Holocaust remembrance, it sort of demand the phrase that I personally feel like is the most important here, nie wieder Faschismus. Never again will we be, when we see fascism, we need to say something about it. When we see such tendencies, we need to position ourselves against it in the clearest of ways. And given the last developments in the recent developments in German politics, the whole story in Thuringen, the AfD playing a part in a local government for the first time, also when they won't actually be in office in any way, but they did play a part. And this is exactly the sort of things that you would expect actually the political system to say. And for me, the fact that fan groups and ultra groups sort of voice their views in a strongest term than actual politicians, which should be their job, it says it all, first of all, about how involved fan and ultra groups here are and how socially responsible they are. And second of all, about the political situation in Germany, unfortunately. So that's basically from my angle of things. Was there anything, by the way, at Armenia that I missed? Was there a ceremony at one? I think they played against Bochum last weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So we started, of course, with the English week more or less on the Tuesday night. So one day after the Remembrance Day itself. I can't remember we had the silent minute before kickoff, but what we had was especially at halftime, because there are more people listening than before the game. There is a man who works at the Wewelsburg, which was a former Nazi point in Westphalia especially, and he kind of works for a lot of clubs in this region and looks through records and documents to see how the club was working during the Nazi era. And he explained a bit about everything that was going on during Arminia's time there, that we had a president who was a Jew and was killed in Auschwitz as well. So it was very concentrated, as well as in Cologne, as you said, on the club's history. And they said how you can look it up and never again as well. So not as big as it was at some other point. But Armenia always does kind of those discussion rounds and also information events. I was at one as well from the same guy who had a whole presentation on how Armenia was handling the Holocaust more or less. He says they're it's good that they finally took a step to openly display it, because it's the time from 1930 to 1945, it's openly displayed in the Armenia Museum, which I find really, really good. And because we had the president that is actually, he's the reason why Armenia still exists. If he wouldn't have handled how we handled things, Armenia wouldn't be a topic today. His name was Julius Hesse, but he was brought to or deported to Auschwitz and was killed there as well as his wife. But we also had a guy who was in the SS and who was a president during Nazi time in Bielefeld. This was something I would have heard, would have liked to heard as well, because it's not only, yeah, we had a Jew, but we also were really, really bad in the Nazi era. We weren't a good club there. We weren't an outstanding club who was against fascism. And I think this is something fans have to hear, because people are very easily trying to distract themselves from this history. And if they hear it there, they can't really... If you're in a stadium with 26,000 people, you can't really not listen to it. And I think it's really important that clubs keep using this platform. If it's on Twitter, if it's in the stadiums, it's really important that they do it. And I think a lot of clubs are in the right way. And I'm very happy that my clubs openly takes the stand against racism and Nazis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, we discussed it before the recording. I think Armenia are one of the clubs that take like the most, at least from what I gather on social media. You obviously live there and you know the city and the club way better than I ever will. But in terms of the messages they convey on social media against fascist demonstrations, for instance, against all sorts of tendencies in the city and stuff like that, there you find words that are so clear and so clear cut. Like, it doesn't... many clubs say we believe in Vielfalt, we believe in diversity, we believe in this and this and that. And unfortunately, there aren't many clubs that sort of voice their views as clearly as Armenia does on this, on those topics. I mean, obviously, there's St. Pauli and Bremen do a very good job, Eintracht Frankfurt through their president. But the let's call it the average professional club in Germany would, for the most part, say the exact same message. We believe in Vielfalt. We are Weltoffen, being open to the world, if you will. It's the exact same pattern, and unfortunately, in this day and age, it's not enough. And we need to sort of both football clubs, fan groups, everyone involved need to understand that in our time, taking the conservative approach of saying, yeah, we believe in being open to the world and we believe in diversity, it's not enough, because the views that we stand against are so, they are so clear cut, and they are so against any democratic and democratic tendency, any democratic idea, any idea of countering racism, sometimes in certain directions that I would even call anti-Semitic. We stand in front of views that are genuinely dangerous. And in the face of such dangers, I would expect football clubs to live up to their social responsibility and be as clear-cut with their words as possible, because they can make a difference. I mean, that story from, when was it, 2-3 months ago with the fascist demonstration in Bielefeld that Armenia... Yeah. Called people to join the protests. I think Hannover 96 did the same that same weekend or a weekend afterwards. I think the day before the protest, all of a sudden across the Alm, there were loads of fascist banners and fascist flyers. And Armenia sort of said, listen, we took a stand against the fascist demonstration, but now the people responsible for it probably threw all sorts of right-wing messages across our stadium. If you're around, come over, help us clean this trash out. Such actions, such clear-cut opinion, and such clear-cut message about these things is exactly what's necessary. And again, everyone knows that clubs like FC St. Pauli are very left-wing and very openly against these things. That's all well and good, but not everyone is FC St. Pauli. Not everyone is so left-wing in terms of their own fans. Clubs like, clubs that are so... anchored in their cities, that are considered local institutions. Here in Cologne, you see the most if you walk around Cologne. Two things: you'll see the Dome and you'll see SFC Köln. Those are the two things that dominate this city entirely. apart from Carnival, of course. But yeah, those are the two things you see everywhere you go. And that's just, this just goes to show the power that such clubs have in their own communities. And I hope that going forward, clubs will find clearer words about such tendencies. I can't say I'm very optimistic also in this area, because clubs sort of say we represent all sides and all sorts of stuff like that. But yeah, clubs like, messages like similar to what Armenia has conveyed in the last few months is exactly what we need from clubs that stand in the middle of their communities. And I hope this will be the case for many, many other clubs in the future.
Yeah, I think there's nothing more to add to that. It's always good what they do now, but there's always a lot of ways to go up and to go better and to get better. Another topic that I hadn't in mind first, but we spoke about it off recording as well, is the topic of sexism. Mm-hmm. I think football is still a very man dominated world. It's always, for me as a woman, to make a football podcast as well is already a huge step for me. I get looked at very weirdly when I say I'm a football fan and I'm actively supporting a team and not only be there to meet my friends or so, which I also do because it's kind of a society thing. But I think this is a problem which is, very, very big, still very, very big, is not that discussed as other topics. And personally, for me, you told me about what is all going on in Cologne, that there are a lot of women in the ultra scene, something that isn't like that in Bielefeld. Of course, it's a smaller club, it's a smaller stadium, it's a smaller ultra group. We only have one really big ultra group and not like other clubs, like three or four. But for me, for example, to take a flag and hold it for the game wouldn't be a possibility. And also, in our scene, it's more like that the women are not. That's the huge problem. They're not sticking together. But they think them being a woman in an ultra group is something that they have as a, monopole there, and they don't want other women to join, which is like really, really stupid. But I also think this is, if you look at comments from yesterday's match where Bibiana Steinhaus was the referee and there were a lot of offside goals, and a fan said, I think it was a Bayern fan, but it doesn't really matter, said this happens when you let a woman referee a game. And Leverkusen reacted to that and say, no, this is happening when we're offside.
Yeah.
Which I think was a good reaction to show this that a club takes a stand, not only other fans, but a club openly takes a stand to this comment, because sexism is real. It's really going on. And it's always, for me, it's a bit sad to hear that it can be other ways, like it is in Cologne, something that it's not that possible in Bielefeld at the moment, sadly.
No, I mean, I generally think you're right. I think also, in Cologne, we have quite a few women waving flags and stuff like that. But I think, generally speaking, it doesn't mean the situation is perfect. Far from it. I think, there was recently, I think it was in October or December or November, there was an event at Cologne University that the ultra scene took part in. And they say, listen, FC fans, we sent two representatives from two ultra groups to sort of talk about anything you want. Of course, there won't be any cameras because we're talking about ultras, but we'll discuss anything you want, ask whatever you want. We're open to questions, and let's start a discussion going. And there were representatives of the Wilde Horde, the biggest ultra group, most well-known ultra group in Cologne, and the Koloniaks, which is the second biggest ultra group, an ultra group that's also very politically active, take a very open stance when it comes to politics and to the anti-fascist direction, put it this way. And they do a very good job in this direction, in my view. The two representatives were obviously male, and many topics were discussed. The discussion was very open and very candid. Also, they discussed issues that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to discuss openly, such as violence within the ultra scene and what sort of role does it play? And the response was very honest, even if many people didn't like it. But the one topic in which they were, asked by the audience or by the journalist, Ronny Blaschke was the host, they were asked about the issue of women in ultra groups, and they were completely blank. They just didn't know what to say. So I think there's a lot of improvement. There's a lot of room for improvement. I think if ultra groups want to move forward, if ultra groups want to sort of develop with time, I think being allowing yourself to be open to female fans is inevitable, practically. I think, generally speaking, the number of women that attend games in Germany is, if I'm not mistaken, it's the highest in Europe, and it's only going higher. Also, when it comes to the active fan scene, I mean, I'm obviously, my angle will always be from the FC Köln angle, but actually, like, I also spend time ground hopping in other ultra Kurven in Germany. I'm going to Freiburg on Saturday, which I'm looking forward to, and I've been to Bochum last week in the same terrace as their ultras, and you sort of see more and more and more women sort of creeping in and doing their and basically going into this very very male dominated structure. But I totally think you're right. I think ultra culture and football in general in Germany and in general, of course, but my expertise is, of course, German football. The whole structure that is German football, from the clubs and how they are structured, from the DFB, the people that actually work around football, stewards, anything around it, and of course, fans. Everything around it is by men and for men. That's how it's structured nowadays. It's just, there is no way of going about this. There are women that buck the trend and sort of, break new ground in that sense. We know that, for an instance, in cities like Heidenheim, there are actually all female ultra groups already, which is a great development, a fantastic development, I believe. But if ultra groups and if clubs, but we focus on ultra groups, want to move forward, it's only natural that they will sort of have a process of inner thinking and decide what can we do to sort of, first of all, be more diverse generally, not only when it comes to women, but I think the issue of sexism in the fan scenes in Germany is something that is so shouting and it's so there that you just cannot ignore it anymore. And I can only hope that moving forward, things will improve. I also think solidarity is something that as you've mentioned, many female ultras I've spoken with sort of say sort of the same things as you just did, that, you know, women that are organized in fan groups are often being seen under the microscope more than their male counterparts, which makes them a bit more, take up this culture in a bit more extreme way, in a bit more rejective way towards other women, maybe. Again, it's something that I've never experienced myself, so I'm only talking from the perspective of someone that hears the evidence from other sides. But I think the issue of solidarity is definitely something that needs to be addressed going forward. I personally, from my very, very masculine, very manly point as a football journalist, it's important for me to bring this topic forward, even though I think there is no topic that I write about and tweet about that makes me lose Twitter followers as sexism. But I think it's important, and I think it's something that if football wants to evolve, if German football wants to evolve, and if the ultra scene wants to evolve and remain this Volkssport, the people's game that it is, I think being like achieving structures that allow women become active parts of every single element of the game, be it as players, as fans, as ultras, as football executives, most importantly, a field that's completely dominated by men, even more than the average company in society, which is also has its issues, of course, but in football, it's just so apparent. I mean, you have the DFB and the DFL that out of, what, 30-something directors, only one of them is a woman, and she's responsible for Mädchen football, for women's football. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it doesn't hold in the 21st century. And football needs to achieve those structures and to have an inner discussion within itself to achieve those structures. And that's exactly where it's stuck right now, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how and if it develops. I think the role that women have in this discussion is very, very important. I think that the fact that more and more women take up those roles of being, football executives. We have Sandra Schwedler at FC St. Pauli, the only head of supervisory board, who's also a woman in a professional football club in Germany. SV Babelsberg has also a female head of supervisory board. And you see that the more women break new ground, the more this discussion goes forward, which is exactly the development that I, from a perspective of a male fan and of a male journalist, who sees it as important to sort of understand the structures that sort of allow you to become a football fan, the structures that allow you, in my case as a journalist, to sort of, you know, put my name forward and say that I'm a football journalist. Those structures were made for me to become part of this in society as well. Like, it's accepted that in journalism, what, you would barely see a woman in a press area. It's also something that should be addressed, because the more diverse every single aspect of the game will become, including journalism, the quicker the structure will be achieved that will allow different people from different from different backgrounds, from different ethnicities, from different sexual orientations, and yes, from different genders, to become part of this thing called football. And I think it's only natural that in 2020 this discussion will take place, and it's starting now. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it's starting now, and I'm of the hope that it will be achieved in the foreseeable future, but there is still a long, long way to go.
Well, I think this is a very, very well put closing point to this chat. I could talk for hours and hours. I really like chatting with you. I think you have a lot of good, really good points in politics, in football in general, in journalism as well. It was a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you for taking time to do this. Yeah. Also, thank you for Matthew Carrigage, who's in the background today, editing this whole podcast and always is the best host of this show. Thanks to Matthew as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you. You did a brilliant job presenting it. Had great fun talking to you. Thank you for having me.
I wish you a great day, everyone. If you do not follow Felix yet, do go follow him. He has really, really good insights on German football and football in general and politics, as I said. We will be back for a normal episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast next week, as you used to. And everyone, thanks for listening and have a great day.